Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
On DAB Digital Radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Hawksby and Jacobs on Talk Sport.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily. Just some of the best bits of this afternoon show. We had a lot of guests in today. Among them, Louise Minchin. You'll know her from BBC Breakfast, of course. But she's also written a fantastic book on her time as a triathlete. She's a Team GB triathlete. Who knew?
I didn't know.
She's a lovely lady, wasn't she?
Very nice person, yeah.
So she was on good form. You'll also hear from Mark Nicholas, former cricketer turned broadcaster and author.
Tom Williams, who's written a very interesting book about...
Yeah. The language of football.
The language of football around the world. A brilliantly well-researched
book.
Yeah,
you'll kind of get the Uruguayan equivalents of a wet Wednesday night in Stoke, etc. It's a great read. We do recommend it. So, and we had a bit of a chat as well about last night. So here it all is. This is Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. We'll be through until 4 weather this afternoon here and there from Simon. That it all kicked off, all got a bit physical in the face-off between David Hay, Tony Bellew. I'm sure the cynic in you thinks...
Yeah, it's a few more tickets.
The boys had said, that's pay-per-view looking, Eddie. Well, it's good, you know, they'd always be better. Yeah, just leave it to us. Leave it to us. Anyway, Andy, what's coming up?
Coming up over the next 3 hours. Would VAR have made a difference last night? Liverpool's Moneyball examined. And cricketer-turned-broadcaster Mark Nicholas makes a welcome return to the studio.
He certainly does. We'll take your calls, emails, texts and tweets. And Breakfast TV's Louise Minchin is here to tell us how she became a Team GB triathlete.
There's all this plus countdowns. Rachel Riley pops in.
Oh, yeah.
Guests today. We'll learn the global language of football. And we'll talk both Atletico and Real Madrid.
We certainly will. Terry Gibson joins us a little bit later on. And about live football tonight. And, of course, the Champions League final, which we'll, of course, be touching on throughout the next 3 hours. But it is 6 minutes past one. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. It was a good game, wasn't it? You know, a lot of people bemoan the defending and saying, well, you know, it's Champions League semi-final, defending should be better. That's probably true, but still exciting, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I mean, after yesterday's caller telling us that he didn't watch last week's game, I think he said he was watching Kavanagh QC instead.
Yeah.
So
you did.
So I was very tempted to turn over at Kavanagh QC when Liverpool scored and were so on top, and they just looked ripe for the taking, didn't they, Roma? But they got their way back into it, and it was a little bit nervy at the end.
But and they got a touch lucky, but you know, you need that, don't you, if you're going to get through. So, you know, fair enough.
It was a mad
over the two ties they deserved to go through.
No, they absolutely did. And we'll talk to Graham Pohl about it. He was working for BT last night, but we'll look at some of the calls. There was definitely a make-up decision there by the ref.
We've seen some terrible errors in the Champions League this year. Nanga, man, what was he doing?
I know.
Honestly, and then the night before that one, and we've seen really some poor play in this year's Champions
where
League.
Where he struck that from, Nanga, and the one that went in off the post towards the end was very similar. Remember when we saw him for Belgium against Sweden when he scored that goal, the only goal of the game.
He's a good player, Robertson's a good player. What a run that was, you know. And I always knew he was good when he played for Hull, but that's why I wanted to talk about Moneyball today, because I think that's Moneyball at its best. They just looked at this player. They didn't look at the fact that he played for Hull. They didn't look at the fact that he only cost $10 million. They just saw a player that fitted what they needed, and that is the essence of it.
I mean, as soon as I saw him playing, Paul, when he
I used to think he was great,
he came down from Scotland, I thought, what, I'd love to have him in the team. You could, you know, just needed eyes. And
but you know, sometimes your gut feels good. Other times, you know, with Salah, who knew Salah was going to be like this world class player? I knew he had skills, but not. Yeah. You know, I think you'd be a liar if you said, as a Chelsea fan, oh, I knew he was going to go on and do this.
No, I mean, you know. To be fair, when he was playing, you felt he needed more chances and he wasn't getting
enough of a look
in. De Bruyne
are different. And
you kept saying he was trying too hard. He got so few chances whenever he did play for Chelsea.
Yeah, he did. He overdid it. In fact, he wasn't great last night. And isn't it funny how you called him this? I've written here, brilliant by T. Trent Darby to avoid, and I wasn't even thinking about it. You just can't help calling
Trent Darby.
You just can't help calling it. Yeah. In my notes, but it was good at the end when they had all three guests were very, very good on what it's like to play and win in a European Cup or Champions League final. Rio, Frank, and Steven Gerrard. It's lucky Glenn didn't join them.
Yeah, it would have been a bit. it would have been a bit difficult. Yeah, we had a spell in the first division, really the old first. Well, the new first division, the old second division.
But it was good, and I did send you a clip of Gary Lineker, because Gary Lineker is such a brilliant presenter that when he makes a mistake, you think to yourself, has he made a mistake there, or is that meant to be a joke? Is that one of his, you know, like quite clever? Because he said we told you a statistic, the Liverpool score in bursts of three goals. So it was Mane, Milner and Wijnaldum. And it wasn't.
He struggled all night with Wijnaldum, Wijnaldum. He struggled all night with that.
I don't know what happened there, but never mind. You know, he is very, very good. What else have I got here? Credit to Roma, I've said. Oh, yes, and the fact that, I said to Jim there, didn't I? Kill Frank Lampard to say it, but he had to concede they really have built a decent team, Liverpool. And they're on the verge of something quite exciting there, I think.
Yeah.
And I said to you, I think they've been almost as good as City since the turn of the year. Van Dijk, he makes such a difference. Even in the first 2 minutes last night, he made two clearances where he just sort of laid down his authority. You know, he's a very, very good signing for them.
He certainly is. So we will be covering that in a bit more detail over the next couple of hours. We will chat to the good people at StatsBomb and look at the kind of Moneyball approach to an extent. I mean, I made a couple of points to you that I'll bring up with Ted from StatsBomb that, you know, it's not all bargain buys, is it? You know, they've spent a lot of money in certain areas.
No, but it's still Moneyball. Sell one player for 142.
Yeah.
Buy another top player that you need in an area you need for 75. So you get rid of a player that you in effect, you didn't need because
no one's really talked about it much since.
You know how clever that is. You know, my other final note: Cengiz Under, who came on for Roma. I don't know if you know this, but his dad used to play rugby league. He's known as Upendie.
Sorry. Good goodness sake. The birthday spread's back.
It is. I've got a T20 birthday spread today.
Good.
In fact, I've got two because I had one from the other day. So I might well do them.
Oh, we'll look forward to that.
Okay.
Anything else?
What, now?
Well, yeah, I don't mind if you've got anything else now. You may
the
have
trouble
something.
Is my notes haven't come through, which is always a bit annoying.
So you're having to do this off the top of your head?
Well, I'm having to sort of sort it through. It's never quite the same. So, no, let's move on.
Were you ever tempted to turn over last night? I've got to be honest, as I said, Liverpool so dominant, I thought, you know, I felt a duty to stick with it because here we are talking about it today, but I just felt it was going to be a bit of a procession, but I was quite surprised. I mean, I didn't.
No.
I stuck with it.
I didn't, because you just felt there were goals in it. You just felt that Dzeko's a good player. I think he's got better since he left City. You know, it was a shame for Chelsea that they didn't get him. Again, that's that typical thing. Yeah, offer 30 or 35. The club want 40.
Mm.
Why? Surely it's better to pay 40 for Dzeko rather than pay 23 for Emerson and never play him. You might as well have just given them the right money for Dzeko and then decided whether you needed Emerson or not. You know, I just think some of the stuff they've done. Chelsea are the opposite of Moneyball. They're just stupid ball, in my idea. Some of the stuff they've done.
Is stupid ball the opposite of Moneyball?
It is. It's basically don't use the
you hadn't given that
you've
much
got.
Thought
don't
before
spend it. The money in the right way. You know,
Andy Jacobs' new book, Stupid Ball. How to waste copious amounts of money on footballers that aren't very good.
Exactly.
Some of the West Ham travelling fans who are going to the Leicester game, they may, I don't think they're going to have to give up their seats for Karen Brady and the two Davids, but have you seen that they're still
bad blood? Do you remember this? I don't know this story.
I think it was in her column? It was in her column in The Sun, Karen Brady's column. She made a comment that she'd seen the owner of Leicester spending a lot of money on wine. On
500,000, apparently, according to the paper this morning.
He was having a big spend-up.
Well, but I don't think, you know, the two things aren't linked. He didn't fire Claudio Ranieri and then go, oh, I'm so happy I'm going to spend 500 grand on wine.
No.
Presumably he was buying the wine anyway.
I think she was making the point that Ranieri was hard done by and what do you have to do to keep your job these days? And then sort of alighted at the fact she'd seen him in, in London's busy West End spend £500,000 on one, which is his prerogative.
His prerogative, and I can't see the two things
but
are connected, personally.
It played very badly with Leicester, and the word is they won't be welcome in the director's box. So be sitting amongst...
Give him a £5 bottle of wine, that's what I do.
Sitting amongst all the West Ham away fans, I'm sure they'll get a warm welcome.
Oh, well, they're bound to.
Sit here, Karen. Yeah, you're all right, love. Sit there. Watch the guy. I'll talk you through it. Fantastic. That'd be marvellous, wouldn't it?
See if you
are going to that game, whether you welcome that, let us know this afternoon. Talksport.com/H&J. Text to 81089. Tweet to TSH&J. But coming up in the first hour, Graham Pohl joins us. Was on BT duty last night watching that game unfold and was called upon on quite a few occasions. The Roma camp saying, oh, if only VAR was there, we would have won that game. Well, would they? We'll look at some of the big calls from last night. The referee, Andy, you tell me, has admitted that he got some stuff wrong, which would, in that game last night, which
did,
would suggest that there was a bit of a make-up decision done.
According to Tancredi, the referee did admit afterwards.
Okay.
Can I, just before we go, wish Peter Jones and his friend, they're walking for calm. It's to raise awareness and to reduce male suicide. He contacted me.
Yeah.
They're walking from Fulham to Birmingham tomorrow, so best of luck with that.
It's Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport, and we will chat to Ted Knutson from StatsBomb later on. We'll look at Liverpool's transfer policy in recent years. And also Tom Williams will be here, journalist and author, to chat about his new book, Do You Speak Football? But before all of that, to chat about her new book, Dare to Try, is a Breakfast TV presenter and Team GB triathlete. Who knew?
What I said.
Louise Minchin,
you should go on Breakfast Television to publicise.
Yeah, that's right. They're giving you a slot.
Thank you very much for letting me talk about it, because I'm literally not allowed to talk about it on Breakfast. So cheers, guys.
Wow.
Appreciate it.
I didn't know this, Louise. The guy said, take the book home. And I had no idea that you had this kind of other life where you were a kind of an athlete, an international athlete.
It is a new life for me. It only started in 2012 when, I don't know if you saw it, but we did a Christmas challenge for BBC Breakfast. And my producer said to me, I can't think of anything to do. And I said, well, why don't we do something inspired by, guess what, the Olympics? So she set us off to go to the velodrome in Manchester. I'd never been to a velodrome. I'd never sat on a racing bike. And she said, you're going to race against Bill and Susanna, you and Charlie. It's going to be in front of 4,000 people. And I just thought, what? Yeah. Are you crazy? I can't even sit on a racing bike. Anyway, we went there, and that day was terrifying. And I screamed. Have you ever been to a velodrome?
But did you go up on the bank?
Yeah.
No, I did not
go up on the bank. The bank is very, very steep. I did go up on the bank and slide down on my bottom just to see how steep it was.
Fair enough, yeah.
Anyway, we went in that day, and Bill Turnbull said, he said a key thing. He said, I can't be beaten by a girl.
Really?
Exactly. He did. And I just thought, you know what? Bet you can be. And I raced that day and hadn't done competitive sport for 30 years. And I just absolutely went for it. Mostly, I think, at the time, because I wanted to beat him. But then I beat him, and then just it was utterly, ridiculously exhilarating, endorphins. And I was just like, wow, I need to race again.
So you saying that you were quite a decent swimmer when you were young. So is that what kind of led you to this idea of maybe using the swimming and the cycling?
I'd like to say that it was, but it wasn't. I was okay swimmer. I swam for school. And loved it, and used to get really incredibly nervous, but loved the races and loved winning. But one day I gave that up because I looked at myself in the mirror, and I'm ashamed to say now, I was 15 and I looked at my shoulders and I saw they were really muscly. And I just thought, I don't like those. I know it's the swimming, and I stopped.
Wow.
It was really
so that's true.
What do you think? Look at that.
Look at the guns.
Oh, wow. I'm quite pleased with those now.
That's true of a lot of girls. That's a good point, actually. I know you've got young daughters, and you know a lot of girls do give up sport for that reason at that age, which is a great shame.
Exactly that age. And when I started the triathlon, and basically, so what happened, I came out of the velodrome and then thought, I have to race. Bought myself a racing bike, fell off loads and loads of times. And then a friend said to me, I've seen you on your racing bike, seen you running. Why don't you try triathlon? But going back to the girl's point, at the same time, this friend of mine said she was going to do a triathlon. And I thought, well, I'm going to try too. But I read some research about girls particularly, and that exactly that it's a really key age at teenagers. They give up for all sorts of reasons, but similar to the ones reasons I gave up. And it also said that if you're a mum and you want your daughters to do sport, you have to do it. You can't just let it be the dads, because they'll just think, oh, that's a dad's thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You seem very competitive. Would you do brownies if a relative of yours sort of collapsed? And would you stop and help them, or would you just...
Oh, no, I'd definitely stop and help them.
You would?
Yeah, no, definitely.
And then you say, oh, no, I think you're going to say, oh, no, I'd leave them.
No, well, I mean, I like racing. I'd love to win. I don't win very often. But, no, I would definitely stop. And it is a sport. That sport is like that. People are incredibly helpful. I've had all sorts of people help me on the way and various different places. And yeah, I would generally stop. But if they were racing for the line, you know, then right, I would give enough. It a go. Mm.
Now, what sort of triathlon do you? Because I remember when triathlon first came out, I think it was in World of Sport. It used to be in Hawaii. It used to be called the Iron Man.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it really was ridiculous. It was like a 100-mile bike ride and 5 miles. So I can't read
it. I tell you, I do know. I think it's 3.8 kilometer swim, 180 kilometer bike ride, and then a marathon.
Yeah,
because I'm doing one.
So you're doing the Iron Woman
in December.
Stroke Man.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, Patagon Man. It's called. Why can't they change it to
it
Patagon Woman? Yeah, or thing.
Yes.
You say in the book as well.
Iron Person.
The Iron Person. Yeah, that's a bit weird. You kind of feel a lot fitter mentally. You feel better. You feel less tired. You said it's been really good sort of generally for your well-being. Yes.
It's changed me in lots of different ways. So I get up at 3:30 in the morning to be on breakfast at 6. And
just like our breakfast show presenter.
Well, he gets up at 6:15.
Does he?
It's normally about 20 past. Today, but that's another story.
He didn't turn up till 7:15.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
No. It's a long story.
I've never actually missed it yet. No.
Work here, you can miss it every day. No one says anything.
It's close, but I've never actually... Oh, no, I actually didn't... Once I did miss a set of headlines, but that was it. So I was on by about 1 minute past.
Right.
No, so it's changed me physically. As you can see, I've got, you know, got the muscles, which I'm now proud of. I'm really much stronger than I was, which is brilliant because, you know, it means I don't fall over so often. I can obviously run faster for the bus when I'm a little bit late. And mentally, I'm much... Every single bike ride, every single run, every single swim, I never come back from them feeling worse. I always come back from them a little bit happier, a little bit less stressed.
When you're cycling, are you cycling on the road? Because especially in London, I wouldn't cycle in London. I think it's too dangerous.
I used to cycle in London and I used to cycle to work in London. And this is how much my life has changed. So now, for fun, I'll go and do a 50K bike ride. When I lived in London and was working Television Centre, it was 6 miles there and 6 miles back. I'd cycle the 6 miles and then put it on the train on the way back. Right. Bad.
I don't blame you.
But... it's a serious point, of course, and the road, you know, I particularly don't like cycling in the winter, in the rain and the cold and all the rest of it, and there are obviously dangers. So
potholes.
Yeah.
Cyclist today with his face.
Yeah, I know. Sadly, you know somebody who died through this. You know, avoiding a pothole.
And it's a very serious point. And I do a lot because of all of the above. I do a lot of my training on an indoor bike. I now play a virtual reality game on my indoor. This is extraordinary levels I've reached.
Have you got a Watt bike?
Have had a Watt bike. I've changed from that now.
Have you? Yeah. Is there a better one?
Well, it's called a Smart Turbo. You put your actual racing
And you'll go out and buy one there. He's a bit one up.
Are you?
He'll be straight up
Come
the shop
on.
With his $5,000.
I'll race you. I'll race you. Yeah. So you can race. So you attach your own racing bike.
You are competitive. Look at me. I'm 65 year old. I'll race you. Yeah, big deal. You'll win. It's brilliant.
But you can race people, and I don't win, but I like racing all around the world. So I'll go on the bike at sort of Sunday evening, and there'll be people from Australia
nice
or
idea.
Japan, right. And and you've got your little avatars, so you're cycling along next to each
because
other.
Because you said it's not just you deciding to do triathletes for triathlons for fun. You've represented Great Britain in your age group. So how did that transition happen from just getting into it to someone saying, well, yeah, you know, you could do this nationally?
That's sort of what happened. So I did my first triathlon, loved it, hated it, cried when I went over the finishing line. I thought, I'm never going to do this again. 2 minutes later, I'm definitely going to do this again. So I did a few, and I did the Brownies, used to have a brilliant triathlon, and I did theirs as well. And then I started coming quite high in my age group. So I was like fourth in my age group, and I didn't realise being a little bit older is good in triathlon.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Stamina. Yeah.
You, well, stamina, and also you don't get judged against your age group. You get judged in 5-year age group. So I'm in the 45 to 50s, so I don't race against the 20-year-olds. And somebody said exactly that. They said, you're all right at this. Why do you know if you go to a qualifying triathlon and you get a qualifying time, you can represent the GB team in your age group? And I thought, what an utterly bananas brilliant idea.
They have an age group Olympics. They do have a sort of...
Well, you saw that veteran stuff, don't
we saw that bloke was 100 years old, the sprinter. He was tremendous.
I can see you in the pole vault, Andy. I think you'd be good.
What would you do?
So pulling on the old GB vest and stuff, and the outfit, the wetsuit, what a feeling that must have been.
Utterly brilliant. That's one of my most exciting moments in my life, when the GB suit... Because I just wanted to have Minchin GBR written on my...
Tremendous.
Exactly. So when that arrived, that was absolutely brilliant. And I went to the World Championships in Chicago, and there were lots of us. I mean, there were 400 people in the team. It's not a small team. And it was just fantastic to be part of it and part of the whole gang out there, and incredible supporters as well.
Fantastic.
Well, you'd be glad to hear that I came last in the team that time. But I was there.
No, I'm incredibly impressed.
So, Dare to Try, my journey from the BBC Breakfast Sofa to Team GB Triathlete by Louise Minchin is available now. It's published by Bloomsbury. And yes, inspiring stuff. Good to see you, Louise.
Thank you both. Thank you very much.
The Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. It's a big question. Do you speak football? Because every nation that loves football has its kind of own language. And kind of somebody who spotted that, of course, is the author and journalist Tom Williams. He has written the book, Do You Speak Football? A glossary of football words and phrases from around the world. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon.
What a great idea for
a
book.
Yes, it's a sensational idea. I imagine it was pretty research heavy. You had to phone a lot of mates from around the world and a lot of publications to pull all this together.
It was extremely research heavy. And one of the first things that I did before I started researching it was to check that no one else had already done it. Because it seemed such an obvious idea, a football glossary from around the world. But I didn't come across, you know, another version
of
it.
Are you a linguist?
I cracked on. I mean, I speak French. I used to live in France, so I speak French. I tried to learn Portuguese in time for the last World Cup and failed. Picked up a few scraps of Portuguese. Studied Welsh at school until the age of 16, and that's it. So I was very dependent on various contributors from different countries who helped me out, and that was a big element of the research, was finding people in all the different countries that I wanted to write about, explaining the concept to them, and then getting a bit of a dialogue going where they could give me ideas for terms and phrases and I could sort of look into them and try and find out the etymologies and things like that.
I think probably the best way to describe how the book works is to look at England first as the first country and give the sort of things you put in there, things like Bambi on ice, bounce back ability, bread and butter, box to box, doing the leads... down to the bare bones. So it's those
a wet
kind of
Wednesday
phrases.
Night in Stoke. I always thought it was a Tuesday night.
Well, this has caused a bit of consternation on Twitter, because I always thought, is it Wednesday? Is it Tuesday?
The alliteration there, I suppose.
Well, the alliteration I found quite pleasing. Yeah. And I think it's one of those things that some of the terms in the book, terms similar to this one, you can trace their etymology quite precisely. This fella said this thing at this time, and it became a saying. With this one, this is basically a slightly hackneyed version of something that Andy Gray once said on a Monday Night Football. So there hasn't ever been a definitive version of it. But it was interesting doing the chapter on England, because going to it, I sort of thought, oh, God, I found all these phrases from around the world. What am I going to write about from England and from the rest of the UK? But you forget how poetic a lot of the phrases we use are, just because you hear them so often, you use them so readily. Even something like bare bones, which you hear all the time, oh, you know, manages down to the bare bones. If you actually think about what that looks like visually, it's quite a striking, it's quite a striking phrase.
Now, look, that in itself is fun. So the English stuff that we're all familiar with. But what brings the book to life is the fact you do take us completely around the world, and we see all these equivalents. I mean, some are kind of, I think we'll know some things like the Italian ones, biscotto, biscuit. Biscotto is the
Doesn't
Italian...
he play for Barcelona?
I think Harry's trying to sign him, because he's down at the bare bones. Is the Italian name for a result that's alleged to have been agreed in advance to benefit both teams, which feels very Italian anyway, doesn't it?
I think the book is on the one hand, you have foreign terms that are quite well known, and then I've also tried to delve a little bit deeper. And you think about Italy, I mean, Italy's got such a rich football lexicon, and terms like biscotto, catenaccio, are things that we're familiar with.
Yeah, we're familiar with that. Thanks to Brian Glanville, really.
thanks to Brian Glanville, yeah.
But Abatino, for example, which is on the cover here, young priest. That's the literal translation. It means a talented midfielder who's afraid to get stuck in. It's hard to quite sort of
see. Yeah, that. So it's quite an interesting one. The great man of letters of Italian football, Gianni Brera, who was the great sort of post-war Italian football journalist, he had this fantastic skill for coming up with nicknames for players. And he decided that he didn't like the look of Gianni Rivera, who would go on to become the great, very stylish AC Milan playmaker of the late 60s, early 70s. Brera wasn't convinced by him, and so he called him Labatino, like the young priest, the young monk. And his meaning was, well, yes, this guy, he walks around and, you know, he does all the beautiful things nicely, and there's something a bit pious about him, but he doesn't break sweat, he doesn't get stuck into tackles, so I'm not having it. That's what I'm going to call him. And that sort of stuck and clung to Rivera for quite a while in his career, and subsequently was used to describe players with similar characteristics, the sort of player that we've all seen, classy playmaker, you know, loves a killer through pass, but rarely puts his foot in.
And there was another one as well I loved, which was Israel. Who knew that a slightly flaky goalkeeper, a goalkeeping error, they call a Bartez over there?
Yeah, that was a real discovery for me. I mean, this came from a contact of mine who's based in Israel, and this is one of the words that they will use to describe a goalkeeping error. They'll describe it as a Bartez, and I think it's just because towards the end of his Man United career, when he went from a pretty accomplished goalkeeper to someone who was letting in embarrassing goals every couple of weeks, for whatever reason that struck a chord in Israel, and that's now become shorthand for a goalkeeping blunder.
Even stop talking about Bartosz, I just want to kiss you on the head.
Even Vietnam, I mean, you've got.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You've got stuff from the hit through the hole. Term employed when a playmaker succeeds in threading a path through a narrow gap in an opposition defense. I mean, who do you know in the world of Vietnamese football who gives you this sort of stuff?
Well, again, this was sort of part of the challenge. I'm trying to think. Who it was. I found in Vietnam. But I mean, sometimes it was I'd read an article about Vietnamese football that I'd Googled, and I'd find the writer, and I'd say, you know, I'm writing this book. And sometimes it'd just be a case of Googling Vietnamese football journalists, reaching out to people, hoping that they got the idea, that they had the time to help me out with it, and then they could, you know, send me some suggestions.
A lot of work, but it's useful. We both said to you before we started the interview, we're taking this to Russia.
We'd say, yeah, it's going to be a great source
of
material.
Also, yeah, good for sort of if you want to have some common ground with people that you meet. But some of the words cross over. For example, armario, which is Spanish for a wardrobe.
Yeah. But you know, this was Mark Hughes' nickname when he was at Barcelona.
Yeah, but we used to call Ed De Hoy the wardrobe.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's quite in English usage as well.
I mean, I think one of the things that became apparent when I was researching the book was that there's only a finite number of things that happen on a football pitch. And what there are a few examples of in the book are foreign names for things that are quite common. But occasionally you'd come across something that didn't have an equivalent name in English, for example. And you think about the skill move that involves a player knocking the ball past an opponent on one side and then running round him to collect it on the other side. You see it in almost every football match you ever watch. We never thought to give it a name in English. Mm. So when it happens, you just have to say, you knocked it past him on one side, run around to collect it on the other. Whereas in France, they call it a big bridge. In Spain, they call it an auto pass, like a south pass. In Brazil, and I think in Portugal as well, they call it a cow dribble. And the story there is supposedly that it comes from informal matches played on scrubland, where you might encounter a passing bovine and have to knock the ball past him to get around it. And yet, you know, in the UK, I think part of it comes from the fact that as the inventors of the sport, we didn't bother to name a lot of things because it was, well, it's our sport, you know, why bother giving names to things? And it's other football cultures that came along later and adopted the sport that thought, oh, actually, you know, this thing keeps happening, so why don't we give it a name?
I think Germany has the best. Having looked through the book, I think Germany has the, maybe because it's the translations that make it so good, but relegation ghost said to haunt him struggling at the wrong end of the table. These phrases they have are fantastic.
I like this Russian one though. Na votorum etaji, on the second floor. And you think, what are you talking about? But it refers to the aerial side of the game. If a team's been conceding a lot of headed goals from set pieces, for example, they might be said to have problems on the second floor.
Oh, okay. What about that?
These will be useful in Russia.
I'm hoping that the Russian phrase will come in handy. There's quite a good Russian one.
I hope you're being honest about this. I hope I don't get end up in prison.
The ultimate stitcher.
Something absolutely
the
terrible.
Nigerian ones were very good as well. I thought monkey yanch, which means monkey backside, shall we say, at this time of the day.
Yes.
Refers to the bruise you're left with after you fall over whilst playing football on a rock hard surface, which is kind of very much of the country and the sort of surfaces have to play on.
Those were the terms that I really enjoyed finding, terms that could only exist in that country. There's one in Kenya, Kukanyaga Nyoka, which is a Swahili phrase, and it means to step on a snake. And to step on a snake is what happens when a player attempts a shot and misses the ball completely, what we'd call an air shot in English. Whereas in Kenya, obviously, you're used to encountering snakes much more regularly than we are, and that's the, you know, that's the term that they use.
You have delved into some really indecipherable languages, like Stromash, which is Scottish, of course, is famous, isn't it? Venerable sports presenter Arthur Montford, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Do that. So that all these. And Bluter, that's another one. So
that's a
even
good,
Scotland himself have, you know, quite a lot for themselves. Yeah.
The Scots have some very good ones, don't they? As we did one yesterday with Jim. Gubbed is another good one.
Gubbed,
which often turns up in Scotland but nowhere else. Have you got a favourite at all, Tom?
I've got quite a lot of favourites. There's there's a Dutch one, chocoladebeen, which means chocolate leg. And in Dutch football, your chocolate leg is your weaker foot. The example I've given in the book is Arjen Robben's right foot. If he ever takes a shot with that, you'd say that he's used his chocolate leg. That's one. There's a Hungarian one for a goalkeeper who flaps at crosses, might be described as a butterfly hunter, in the images of someone sort of standing there madly swiping in the air.
Mm. Now, I think the nature of this makes it, it's a compliment, it's not always taken as such, it's a great toilet read.
People have said this. My only fear is that I don't think people read on the toilet as much as they used to, because everyone just, you get on the toilet and you get your phone out, don't you, these days?
Well, let's bring back the good toilet read. I think we should.
More hygienic.
It's that sort of button. It is perfect pre-World Cup, I think, to kind of get up to speed. So you kind of know, if a particular nation has a bad game, you'll almost know what their pundits, what their equivalent of Loro is saying.
Exactly,
really.
And what their fans are shouting at the TV.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, look, we wish you well with
good,
it.
Tom.
It's great
fun.
So we'll be travelling with us, certainly, to the World Cup. It's Do You Speak Football? Glossary of Football Words and Phrases from Around the World by Tom Williams. And it's published by Bloomsbury and is out. It's kind of a nice size little hardback. You'll sit there on your shelf in your lav. But it's, I'm not saying leave it there forever, but you'll always be picking it up. It's Hawksby and Jacobs here on TalkSport. Good afternoon, Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. Terry Gibson joins us a little bit later on to look ahead to the football tonight and indeed the Champions League final as a Spanish football expert, of course. And we're going to talk a bit of Newcastle and Sunderland with the Telegraph's man in the northeast, Luke Edwards, and Mark Nicholas with us very shortly. But before that, it's Kolkata Knight Riders versus Chennai Super Kings over on TalkSport 2. The match starts at 3:30, but the coverage is underway. And watching the game for TalkSport this afternoon will be the England and Surrey spinner, Gareth Batley. Good afternoon, Gareth.
Good afternoon, man.
So, yeah, table toppers, aren't they?
First v fourth.
Yeah, that should be a decent game.
Yeah, it's a mouth-watering encounter. Calcutta boast a couple of amazing overseas players, Andre Russell and Narine, who are just year in, year out, wonderful performers. But first year back for a couple of years for CSK, and they've hit their straps underneath MS Dhoni leading them again. Shane Watson in fine form up front, smacking them to all parts. So, it looks like it's going to be a heck of a game.
It's amazing how these players like Shane Watson can extend their career, because I mean he's long gone from Test cricket now, but he's having a great time in the IPL. And Narine, I watched Narine the other day. Talk about, I think it was the luckiest innings I've ever seen. It was incredible. he just managed to unerringly find the gaps between the fielders. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean he's got a very, very simple technique with the bat, and it's something he's developed in the last couple of years. So it's an amazing thing for a guy of his age to develop as a top order player. But Shane Watson, wow, what a performer!
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Okay, well, enjoy the match.
Thanks very much, Gareth. There we are. That's Gareth Batty. And that game gets underway at 3:30. Coverage already underway over on TalkSport 2. Made a welcome return to the studio now is the former cricketer turned broadcaster and author and journalist. It's Mark Nicholas. Good afternoon, Mark. Good to see you.
Boys, how are you?
Yeah.
Very good. Always enjoy talking cricket with you. And
well,
your wonderful book, which I recommend to everybody. It's a love letter to cricket. It's a fabulous book. Has it come out in paperback yet?
Yes, it is out in paper. Different cover, actually. Different design. And it's nice. It's done all right. I can't say it's flown off the shelves in the way that we thought the paperback might. So, everybody, it's nice and cheap. Get out there.
Yeah. No, it's a great book.
If you love cricket, honestly, or you know somebody that loves cricket, it is. I'm not going to sound, too crawly, but
he says this when you're not here. Let's
be fair.
Yeah.
it is a brilliant book.
What about that Dhoni, then? Can you believe how well he still plays, how long he's played for, and how high his standards are?
It's incredible.
Fantastic.
Just the eye.
One of my favourite cricketers ever, actually. He's a very
brilliant player.
Yeah, unique. In...
He's a wonderful player to watch.
Did you always feel the IPL was going to be a success, Mark? Or did you have your doubts?
Well, you've got to remember that when it began, it was clashing with the ICL. And we didn't really know. It was very hard to work out the difference between the two, how they'd be broadcast, who the key figures would be, and how the players would be divided up. And it didn't take a second for the IPL to blow the ICL out of the water, primarily because it had the BCCI's power behind it. That's the border control in India. And once it had a miracle, which was the first match, that incredible innings by Brendan McCullum when he made 150-odd. And so everybody turned their attention to the IPL. The costumes were remarkable. The players, the coaches, everything was the best of the best, right down to the cheerleaders. Vijay Mallya, the guy running Bangalore, he hired the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, for heaven's sake, flew them over and had them follow the team round for the whole tournament.
Not everybody likes that, though, Mark.
Your question was it going to be a success?
Yes.
Not whether everybody liked it.
No, I'm talking about the
cheerleaders. In terms of the audience in India, they were fascinated. The cheerleaders were a contentious point, but live at games, they went nuts for them.
Well, what's interesting now, I've noticed this season, and I think it's better actually, they've got the two girls and then they've got the sort of comedy bloke that dances between them, and because I've seen women who like cricket complaining about this. It is a bit antiquated, women holding their pom-poms in front of them, and doing
well, particularly in the world that we occupy now. I mean, Me Too and all that, and very reasonably so. Yes, but at the time, within a week, you could see IPL would be a huge success. Given 2 weeks earlier, you wondered what it was.
Yeah.
That was the extraordinary thing about it. And, of course, the other miracle in its way was that the only non-captain of those eight sides was Shane Warne, who was captain of the Rajasthan Royals, and they won it. So a non-Indian came in, won the tournament, and he was the biggest name in cricket outside of India. So if you take Tendulkar and Dhoni, probably, even ahead of Ganguly and Dravid, I'd say, the other two were Lakshman and Yuvraj, maybe. And there was Warney, and Warney goes and wins the tournament. So it had a lot of glamour.
We should talk about Shane Warne. You've written his autobiography with him, is that?
And I'm writing.
Oh, writing.
I've left my desk to be with you guys.
Oh.
I've got a month to go. I have to deliver the manuscript. Shane Warne's story, as told to me over 35 hours of conversation on tape. Then I it was then transcribed, and then I turned that into a book, told in the first person singular by Warren, and told in his language. I've tried to allow you to hear his voice, to like a stream of consciousness that is loud and clear in Warren's style. People say, oh, it'll be very sensational, and will we want to read half of it? And I'm like, no, this is Warren. I'm talking about the game he loves, the situations in which he's found himself that have sometimes been very compromising off the field, but everything is related back to what a special cricketer he's been on the field.
Talking about one of the five cricketers of the century.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, it's been an incredible winter for cricket, starting with the Ashes and all the disaster that was for England, really, and then culminating in Sandpapergate, and now the 100, it seems cricket is just full of controversy.
You should explain, if people haven't seen it, what the 100 is. I know you've been writing about this on cricket.
It's actually
well,
the 100.
The
100,
is it? Right. Okay.
And the ECB's idea is their research is alarming in that it shows that young people don't follow cricket. Only 2 in 10 rate it in their 10 favourite sports. Only 2 in 10. Can you believe that?
That is worrying.
That's an alarming figure. Walk down the street, would a 12-year-old recognise Joe Root? Quite possibly not. And so the research is alarming. And then they've gone further.
I think he's one of his schoolmates.
Not when he's got that fluffy beard on, that bum fluff on. But and then go a stage further and find out how many are playing it. And the answer is not many, though more, are playing it in primary schools than did because of chance to shine. And you realise that what people want is something different. They want a brand new game, an alternative. It involves bat and ball, but not much else. So the ECB have come up with a shorter form that the BBC can use really well. So can Sky. I don't see the problem in that. We want people watching it. We want more people getting the chance to find heroes out of the game. And it's 100 balls long, and there's a 2.5 hour time span that people. During which you can hold someone's interest. And so they've come up with a 100-ball tournament that has 15 overs as we know them, and then one, if you like, killer over, whatever you want to call it, that's 10 balls long. That might be a bit too gimmicky for some people. I don't see the problem. Cricket in Australia always used to be an 8-ball over game anyway, so I don't think messing around with one over. I think it's quite an interesting dynamic tactically. Now, I've got one grumble. Can I keep talking?
Of course.
I've got one concern, is that as you keep reducing cricket to the lowest common denominator, so you squeeze it into a game where really only batsmen profit because you simply don't have time to bowl the other side out. And once the balance between bat and ball gets too heavily weighed in favour of one, not the other, you change its nature. That mightn't be a bad thing to some people in the modern audience that are after fours and sixes. I would make a slight tweak to the 100-ball game. I would say that a side can only lose 7 wickets. So you choose randomly 8 guys out of your 11 to bat, and you can choose them as you go along. You don't nominate them. You have a team of 11, but only 8 bat, so only 7 wickets can be lost. That will leave some reference to not losing your wicket, and some opportunity for the bowler to think it's worth trying to bowl you out. Because if he takes 7, if there's a bit in the pitch and he takes 7, he knocks you over. At the moment, in a 15, 16-over game, you're not going to take 10 wickets. You'll never bowl a side out. So batsmen play with extra freedom and confidence that makes it even harder for the bowler because they never think their team will be bowled out.
That's what's wrong with Duckworth Lewis for the short form 2020.
Good point. Exactly. Very good point. Yeah, yeah.
But I, the only thing I'd say is that I love short-form cricket. I love 2020, and I think I'll love this. I love any cricket. But I was thinking about this the other day. It is a bit one-dimensional. That thing, you know, where a spin bowler will come in, he's got 5 people round the bat. You'll never see that in 2020. You'll never see that.
No, you won't.
So, you know, it is one-dimensional.
Well, listen, there's another big job, whether you persevere with 2020 only or whether you turn the new City team franchise tournament, well, it's not a franchise tournament, but a City Super League, into a 100-ball game is you have to promote Test cricket harder than it's promoted, because Test cricket it still has a natural inherent audience, and to create a new audience it has to be seen and understood and heard more. And we know that it's now on satellite TV, not on terrestrial TV. We understand that's a problem. It's been a problem since 2005 when it was moved. That's an existing situation. We can moan about it all we want. It's the situation that exists. So you have to promote the hell out of the game, the test match game, to make sure people understand when it's on, what sort of cricket it is. You have to make tickets cheaper. There should be a family ticket. There should be free entrance for kids. To me, if you're school age, you have a school certificate, you take it to the ground, you get it for nothing if there's seats available, etc., etc. There's lots of ways to make Test cricket more attractive. It might be time to look at a four-day Test match game. It might be time to speed the overs up so there's a greater sense of purpose and energy out there. There's ways to make Test cricket attractive, and the game needs to react to them.
Mark Nicholas is with us. Now, Virat Kohli has been saying he's looking to come over here, get his eye in for the summer. And sorry, if duly obliged. So Virat
Very
Kohli
nice
is,
of them. Thank
is,
you.
Yeah. Thank you, Stewie. Thank you for...
sorry again.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's Virat Kohli has just signed for the month of June, so he can get used to our wickets.
So Hampshire signed all the South Africans.
Surrey
signed everybody else.
They do. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the fact the Aussies will be here in the summer. And Justin Langer is a new coach. He'll be with them. I've heard some dissenting voices in Australia saying maybe they should have waited. We'll get Mark's thoughts on that and talk a bit of England cricket as well. That's all we've got. Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. The former cricketer turned journalist, author and broadcaster Mark Nicholas with us in the studio. And Australia announced earlier today that Justin Langer has become the new coach. He'll be coming with the team to England over the summer for that series of one-dayers. I've reading in The Age today, Mark. It's a piece by Greg Baum. He's saying maybe they could have waited. They could have just muddled through now, waited to all of the inquiry into what happened had gone through and then made their decision a little bit later on. You probably know Justin, I'm sure you know Justin Langer very well, so you're probably well placed to tell us what they're getting and whether you think it's a good call or not.
Oh, yeah, very good call. I do know him well. I think he's an excellent call, outstanding guy. Took to coaching quickly, began as assistant, worked with the Australian team batting, then took over in Western Australia, both the Western Australian state side and also the Perth Scorchers in the Big Bash. And he's exceptional. Very tight on discipline and values, but very relaxed on playing style. That lovely combination that allows someone to be natural, to be themselves, but also understands that within the parameters of making this team work. He's very smart at that. He's quite, he's quite altruistic on the baggy green and all that. There was a group of them. Steve Waugh started it with, and there was a group of Hayden, Gilchrist, Langer that were great Steve Waugh men, and the baggy green meant a lot to them. So he pushes that very hard. It's the sort of thing that makes Warnie a bit sick because he thinks it's overpushed. He said, I don't have to wear a cap to know what playing for Australia means. But I think he's an outstanding man. Greg is a great writer, Greg Baum. I know him well. He works, as you said, for the Melbourne Age. I wonder why he wants them to wait. I would have thought the quicker you get clarity, get the right man in place, and they're coming to England to play 5 1-day internationals, and you'd have thought they wanted the right bloke here for that. To you see, the team's been through a big mental trauma. What they went through in South Africa was pretty unpleasant, and they need they're all young guys now, a lot of these one day players. I think they need a solid guy picked to run that side.
You've seen it all. Were you shocked? I mean, we weren't so much shocked at the fact that they were cheating in Sandpapergate, but as Paul made the point, it was the initial reaction to it that was
that
so
that first
shocking.
Press conference, which was almost like, no worries, we move on. And it was just this complete lack of understanding about what they'd done. And there was this kind of arrogance almost in that, this will blow over, this is fine, we're Australia, we're all good. But there was, I was watching it open mouth thinking, they've got no idea what they've just done.
Well, that's the best summary of it I've heard. Mm. You are spot on. Mm. Well, I was there. And I'm like, what? When Cameron Bancroft said it wasn't sandpaper, it was a bit of sticky tape that I'd put some granules on. What? What? You know, you were holding it in your hand, mate. We could see it, you know. Mm. And also the way they wheeled him out, like as fodder, and Steve Smith spoke second. I mean, the captain has to be the captain. The captain goes to press conference. He says, I'm responsible for this. My heads are going to roll and mine might be one of them. See you tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the whole thing was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Mm.
And, you know, I fear for Cameron Bancroft. He's a kid and forevermore, when people see him on the street, they're going to think he's the bloke with the sandpaper. I think Steve Smith might get through this.
Mm.
Warner, I don't know. I think it'd be hard for Warner. He kind of went rogue a bit on the team, so he lost respect from some of the guys. It was a very challenging week, that. Wow.
It was an amazing series.
Some fantastic cricket played in the series. But to see, you know, that Australians based so much on their pride, their national identity, and it comes through sport. And to see it punctured in the way that it was really revealing. And that's why I say those guys, some of them very good guys. I think Langer's a very good choice, and the quicker he gets working with him, the better.
You sounds like you think he's the perfect man to restore the pride.
I do. I'm certain of it. Mm. Their team manager, is a very good bloke, Gavin Dovey. I hope they keep him. I think there's a danger he'll be lumped in with what went on there, and he's better than that, and he works well with Langer. But listen, I'm not here to preach what should or shouldn't happen for Australia, but it's funny, isn't it, how we hold a... Warney says in the book, the truth is we're all English anyway.
They're cheating.
He didn't say it about that. No. What he meant was he was talking about the rivalry in the Ashes. And he was saying that, you know, deep down there's a great respect. We love the English sense of humour. They love our competitiveness and never say die attitude. And there's a lot of respect. And then he said the truth is we're all English. You know, we all started out English anyway. And I think we do have a mutual respect. And I also think we want very strong international cricket. We don't want a diminishing of standards, and particularly of Australia's. Mm.
It's interesting, though, that having been so poor in the tests, the 50-over side went there, and it kind of went under the radar a bit how well they played. And then they went to New Zealand and won 3-2, and they've just been made number one in the world. And, I mean, this is what Bayliss was brought in to do. He hasn't done much for the testing, but he's brought in to do this, and England must have a chance in the World Cup.
Oh, yeah, England start as favourites for the World Cup. Honestly, I'd be surprised if England didn't win the World Cup. They're a fantastic side. They've got that fantastic blend of everything, of experience and youth, of leadership, of power and touch, of variety, of confidence, but not without arrogance. Now, people say, oh, well, we suddenly see them bowled out for a cheap score because they all play a million shots. That's the license that allows them to be the team they are. On the days that you come unstuck playing that way, the great thing is they go and win the next game and drag the situation back. I think they're a really impressive one-day team. I really like their options. I think you can name a squad of 15 or 16 players and replace all the key players with each of them. They've had success with and without Ben Stokes. They're definitely, definitely favourites for the World Cup.
When's the Warney book out, Mark?
I think it's the first week of October, early October.
Look forward to that. I'm sure some of it will be serialised in the papers.
Yay!
Good stuff. If you'd like to pick up a copy of Mark's book, it's A Beautiful Game, My Love Affair with Cricket. It's out in paperback now. Well, good to see you again.
No, great to see you. I really like coming in and chatting with you guys.
Yeah, we will
keep going. Keep doing the great work we all love in the Arbors.
We will catch up with you again soon.
So there we are. That was this afternoon. We return tomorrow from 1 with Martin Kellner, the clips of the week and all that. Just a reminder that as from next Thursday, the daily podcast will become a weekly podcast. Them upstairs have decided we're tweaking things. We're changing things. Yes. You're going to get a bumper crop every week in a big dollop. As we call it in the podcast world. But keep enjoying them daily until then. But from next Thursday, they're weekly. Until then, have a good evening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.